Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
What's happening, guys? Happy Thursday. Let's dig right into it. The press conference kicked off yesterday. The big box off between Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor. I had a few thoughts on it right out of the gate. Okay. It never ceases to amaze me how many times people, including those in the know, promoters, executives, TV partners, fighters, fans, how many people in the know don't seem to realize that this is a show? They don't seem to realize that. Even hardcore fans, they don't seem to realize that what they don't really like is the fight. They like the fight, sure. But that's not what they really like. That probably represents as low as 20% of what they like. Then you've got TV partners, you've got sports guys and analysts, and they're all sitting around and wanting to talk about the fight. The numbers that they are going to get for people that are going to tune in and watch them talk about the fight are going to surpass the amount of numbers that the fight itself are going to get. And no matter how many times this gets shown and proved and shoved in your face, executives, analysts, TV partners, fighters, and even the fans seem to miss it. That will never cease to amaze me. It was never brought any clearer to our attention than yesterday. So the press conference goes on. There is absolutely no chance of a fight breaking out. None. They filled up a building in LA on a sunny summer day with no chance of a fight breaking out. But everybody wants to sit around and talk about like the fight is going to be this huge thing. Well, it is. Sure, the fight's going to be a big deal, but it's all the things that go along with it. And Dana White can tell us until he's blue in the face that the fight is August 26th. But ESPN will tell you the fight started yesterday. Friends do not let friends go without ESPN during the buildup of the biggest fight in history. I want to make this statement. I said it on ESPN yesterday, but I thought it was really brilliant. Like, as it came out of my mouth, I was like the cat that ate the canary. I was so excited with my own words because they're so accurate. They really are. Give Chael a little credit here. I really got this one, but I want you guys to hear it. We are not watching this to see who's going to win. We are watching this to see what is going to happen. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it is a rarity. If the Super Bowl was going on tonight, and I came to you and I told you what the outcome was going to be, you would lose a little bit of excitement to watch. And whether you watched or not, you'd lose some excitement there. That's not what this is about. And it's for the first and only time that I can ever recall, not only in my lifetime, but of things I read about and heard. It's the first time ever that I can recall, we don't really care about who's going to win, but we sure do care about what's going to happen. I made this point yesterday, and the gentleman I made it to, whoa, he kind of challenged me on it. Whoa, Chael, what do you mean people don't care about the fight? And I'm going, well, hold on. When I say they don't care about the fight, I don't mean this in a literal tense. They care, but they don't care as much as they think. The actual fight, 12 rounds. How painful would that be if it went 12 rounds? Oh, my goodness. How boring. Who the hell wants to watch anything for 36 minutes plus breaks in between? An hour of my life? Guys can only use two parts of their body, their hands, and they can only run them into two parts of the other guy's body? His chest and his head? Yeah, I don't need to devote an hour to that. But I sure want to see what happens. And anybody that would ever challenge that, and it never ceases to amaze me how many people would challenge that, don't have to look any further than the fact that a press conference was yesterday in Los Angeles, where there's a lot of things to do at an unopportune time of the middle of the day, on a sunny day, and it was packed. It was absolutely packed. If there's any lesson that any fighter or any athlete as a whole should take from it, I mean, it was right in front of your face. Now let's get into the press conference itself. I liked it, but it doesn't go without some review. Okay, they come onto the stage and there's some pomp and circumstance. Great. We're expecting all of that. We want that. Conor McGregor, but you have to understand this from a more intellectual level. Okay. There's a battle going on that stage. There's two guys, but only one of them is going to win the day. Only one of them is going to dominate the stage. Floyd Mayweather has never been in a situation where that wasn't him. So there's going to be a little interest there. Can he keep up with the wit and with the words and with the showmanship of Conor McGregor? Old Floyd doesn't get off to a great start. He comes out in sweats. He looked like he was getting ready to paint a house. Conor McGregor came out in a tailored suit. He looked like he was getting ready to be a CEO for Berkshire Hathaway. The visual matters. They get somewhat face-to-face. There's nobody in between them, but there's also about 10 yards. But they get somewhat face-to-face. And Conor starts right in. Right in. Whatever he was saying to him, they weren't mic'd up. We couldn't tell. But Conor starts right in. Floyd doesn't move his mouth. Floyd doesn't know what to do. Then Conor starts doing a bit of a dance, like a capoeira. It was actually great. Conor's rhythm was great. The dance was fun. I wish he would have kept doing it. It was funny. Again, Floyd just stood there. Okay, fine. So the press conference starts, and one way to handle a situation when you're beat, which in my opinion Floyd was outmatched. He was outgunned. He also did not get the louder reception from the audience, which is all of these things are relevant. There was a battle going on. Only one guy can win. When you're beat, sometimes a guy will just concede so that he can take the stance of, oh, well, I wasn't trying. That's a very common thing to do, not only in the sporting event itself, but even at the press conference. So Floyd looked as though, and I'm representing the first 5 minutes of this thing. I get into the rest of it. The first 5 minutes, Floyd is clearly underdressed. He loses in that category. He loses the crowd pop, which there's nothing he can do about. Crowd's going to do what they're going to do. But we're still monitoring that at home, aren't we? And Floyd lost. Then when they get into the war of words, Floyd just keeps his mouth shut. That was, to me, his way of conceding and saying, well, I'm not even going to try. And that's what my fans can always do. And I've whipped guys' asses at press conference more times than I can count. And they all say the same thing. Well, this doesn't matter. It's just talk. And the fight's what matters. Yeah, we get that. But not today. There is no fight today. Today's just a press conference. Your microphone versus my microphone. Your ideas versus my ideas. Your hype versus my hype. And your crowd pop versus mine. So it actually does matter, doesn't it? That's the terms that we have showed up here today and agreed upon competing under. And I will take your concession, and I would have got that concession whether you gave it to me or I had to take it from you. But I thought that's what Floyd was doing. And I think I'm right. I think that is what he did early. Okay, let's move on. The press conference begins, and Conor's up at the mic, and Conor's not being Conor. He's stumbling a little bit over his words. He's not confident in his role. He's not doing the things that we're used to Conor doing. Now, I've shared this with you guys before, but I could say this to... It wouldn't really matter how many times I said it. Unless you met him and had the own experience, you're really not going to be able to just take me at my description. Conor McGregor is not what you see on TV. The second the camera's rolling, boom, he is on. He's a consummate professional and great at what he does. He's not like that when the cameras are off. In fact, if I, not only is he a very nice guy and a very pleasant guy to be around, which probably surprise you, I would put his personality in the category, and only slightly, but I would put it there, of shy. He's that quiet. He's that polite. He's that reserved. Until it's time to go. Relevance being, Connor stands up. He's first to talk. And he's now he's standing up at a podium, for those of you that didn't see it. Okay, right out of the gate, not what he's used to. He's used to sitting behind a table. Sounds like a small difference. It's not. It changes things. Connor is also used to a Q&A, which is what I thought I was tuning in to see when I was told a press conference. That's what I pictured. That's what we have in MMA. We do Q&As. A guy sits there, he gets fielded a question. He gives the pocketed response that's witty and clever and brings the crowd to their feet, whether it has anything to do with the question or not. So Connor's up there and he's stumbling through this thing, and I'm watching him do it, and I'm going, hey, what's going on here? We're not off to a great start. And then Connor says something. I don't know if many people picked up on this, but I did. He showed us why he wasn't being the Connor that we were all expecting and we are used to. He said, yeah, they keep trying to catch me off guard. I didn't know I was going to be standing up here giving a speech. And then he moved right on. He moved right on from there. But I picked right up on that. I thought, my goodness, they've sold tickets. They booked an arena. They got this huge event. They had dancers and musics and Jimmy Lennon Jr. ESPN's there. Showtime's there. I mean, this thing is covered. And you didn't tell your principal, who is Conor McGregor? You got two principals up there. Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather. You didn't tell Conor McGregor that it's not a Q&A where he's sitting behind a table, which is reasonable for him to expect considering every press conference he's ever attended. That was the protocol. You want him to stand up and talk to a crowd one-sided? And you didn't tip him off? Nobody grabbed him and told him this is what you're going to do? I found it peculiar. I wouldn't call it wrong. I wouldn't call it wrong because I thought it was fun. I kind of liked, as a viewer, that he was out of his comfort zone. I liked that he was standing up there naked, unhinged, organic. I liked it. But I didn't understand why until Connor flat out told us, yeah, I didn't know this is what we were doing. And then he went from there, and he took some shots at Floyd. It got a little bit. Once I was in on the gag, once he let us in on why he wasn't doing his quick-witted quips and lines and catchphrases, I enjoyed it more. At that point, because I was a little nervous for him, Connor was up there. I felt a little bit attached to Connor for whatever reason, the MMA connection, or because I know him, however it might be. I was a little uncomfortable at first when I saw him sweating and nervous and out of his element. And I appreciated that he revealed that curtain and let us all know, oh, yeah, this isn't what I was ready for. They turned the cameras on, handed me a mic, and told me to go talk to you guys. I liked that. And then I got it. I go, okay, well, let's see what he can do. Let's see how this guy can freestyle. I thought it was wise that he brought us in on it, though, and I think a lot of you might have missed it. I think a lot of that might have gone right over everybody's head when he said, yeah, I didn't know this is what I was going to be doing. He said it that quickly. I just was able to interpret it for what it was, which is what I just laid out for you guys. Okay, so he gets going, and then they hand it over to Floyd. And Floyd, I thought, got better as the day went on, but he did do something that was very bizarre. They had the Showtime exec that had introduced him revealed Floyd's numbers. And people are saying this is going to be a $1 billion fight. They're going to bring in $1 billion. And they told us that Manny Pacquiao was a $1 billion fight. And you're sitting down, it's like, guys, I'm not that dumb. I'm greatly aware that Floyd's purse, his numbers, and his personal wealth are wildly embellished. But the Showtime exec did give us a breakdown of Floyd's entire career and over his lifetime of every fight. He told us exactly how many pay-per-views Floyd had sold, and he then broke that down into a revenue number of $1.3 billion. I thought that was interesting. I love to have those numbers. I also thought it was a miss. Okay, when you got a guy like Floyd that's saying, I'm doing multi-billion dollars in business and I'm worth $1 billion, and then you tell us that over his entire lifetime, he's only generated 1.3. You're saying it as though it's bragging, and it is a very healthy and great number. Nobody's done it. You're just contradicting your mouthpiece that's going to run forward and tell everybody, I got $1 billion in property and jets and in the bank accumulated. And then you reveal that over a lifetime, and the small portion that he receives of that, he's only done 1.3. Don't give us too much info. Let us just enjoy the show sometimes. I don't always need to know what's on the test, teacher. Sometimes I just want to see the class. All right, listen up. Listen up, fellas. If you guys are like me, you could probably think of a million things that you'd rather do than go shopping for new clothes. Between the parking and the crowds at the mall and the endless browsing and the lack of advice online, it's enough to make you want to wear the same t-shirt and jeans forever. But you can't. You can't do it. So let me tell you about Stitch Fix Men. They've reimagined how to find and buy clothes, and you never even have to leave your house. It's that easy. Just go to stitchfix.com. Tell them your size, your favorite types of clothes. Let them know how much you want to spend. You will then get a personal stylist that is going to get to work hand-picking new clothes based on your style and your budget. 5 items will be delivered right to your door. Try them on at home, and you only pay for what you keep. Shipping is free both ways, so anything you don't want, just send it back. And exchanges, they're always free too. You can get your fix monthly, quarterly, or whenever you feel like it. There's no subscription required. It's easy. The shipping is free. Why not give them a try? I promise you will be hooked. Get started right now at stitchfix.com/chael. You're going to get an extra 25% off when you keep all 5 items in your box. That's stitchfix.com/chael to get started today. stitchfix.com/chael.
Hey, it's Shaq, and when the NBA offseason explodes like it just did, you know we're all over it on the Big Podcast with Shaq. All summer, we're bringing you the biggest guests from the NBA, the biggest stars in Hollywood, and tons of great laughs. We're way bigger than a sports podcast. So check us out this week, the Big Podcast with Shaq, with new episodes every Monday at PodcastOne.com.
You're welcome. You're welcome with Chael Sonnen.
Now, Floyd gets up there, and he's... And now, to tie this into the Showtime guy that said, look, it's the biggest draw, and he's done a $1.3 billion in revenue. For Mr. Promotion, he did nothing but de-promote himself. Floyd called himself slow. He said he's not what he used to be 20 years ago. He said he doesn't have the same combinations. And I can get where he would try to take pressure off it. And Floyd's mind, and Floyd's a dum-dum, but he always thinks he's smarter than us. It's one of the biggest mistakes that any entertainer can do. When you're hoping no one's looking at this hand so that you can do things with this hand, you can't outsmart the audience, especially when you're a dum-dum. Especially when you're struggling to put a sentence together. Just leave the thinking to somebody else. Hire new writers. Consult somebody for your script, Floyd. Because I got what he was doing, trying to make us all think, oh, we need to see something here. Floyd, we don't. You need to get on board right now. We're well aware that you're going to whip Connor's butt. We're well aware of that. At least the concept that you should. You're not in touch with the fact that we don't care. In every fight you've ever had, Floyd, it was always important that you fooled us or convinced us that perhaps you would go down. You then do your antics, you make people hate you, and you make people tune in so that maybe they can see you have to eat your own words and go down. We get it. A very simple recipe. You didn't create it. It's been around forever. But don't try to outsmart us. We don't like that. We understand that you are 49-0. We understand that you have 5 world championships in 2 different weight classes. We understand that you have never been beaten since your amateur days in the Olympic Games. We don't care. We're not watching this fight to see who's going to win. We're watching this fight to see what's going to happen. So go out on the stage and tell everybody, like your old man does. Floyd's old man doesn't sell anything. He broke into a press conference and started yelling at Connor. And it was a shoot. He's not smart enough to do a work and try to fool us, I assure you. He broke in and he told Connor, you never boxed before. My son's going to kill you. I'll beat you. He told him that. He said, I'll beat you. I want to fight you next. I'll fight you right now. I don't know if you guys saw that part of the press. It was actually really good. It was in a back room, and this was more of a Q&A, and Connor was more at home, and it was just him on the stage. He kind of do whatever he wanted. Old man Mayweather broke in and was mad, trying to convince Connor. Connor handled it well. He said, Senior, you're a good man. And he was saying, yeah, you're defending your son. You're a good man. And he dismissed him. And old man Mayweather said, I'll come fight you right now. And Connor said, well, how much money you got in your pocket? Which was a great response. The whole thing was great. But now Connor's in his element. He's behind a table. It's a Q&A. He's got a few pocketed quips here and there. But on the stage, Mayweather decided it was a good idea to demote himself. And he's been on this bandwagon for a while. Before he ever got this fight, he was going on boxing shows trying to convince the boxing community how good Connor's hands are and how fast they are. And that, well, he struggles with southpaw. He was trying to convince people that it was going to be a good fight. Floyd, we get it. What you don't get is we don't care. So stop. Go fan some money at some people and say you're going to whip the guy. Let him flash a fancy watch in front of people and he's going to say he's going to whip you. Call it straight from here on out. The truth is always on your side. If there's something to hype, hype it. If there's a personal beef, let it be known. If there's not and it's a cash grab, that's okay too. Contrary to popular belief, that is okay too. And where things sit between Floyd and Connor right now, they don't have any animosity towards each other. They're partners. They are now business partners. They like one another. Connor wants Floyd's fans plus some to tune in, and Floyd wants Connor's fans plus some to tune in. That's not always going to be true. When you start going through these press conferences and you start attacking a guy, and then all of a sudden you're out of bullets and you're in a new city and you got a new press conference and you don't want to use old material, so you start attacking him in a different direction. And all of a sudden he's out of bullets. He already used everything up yesterday, so now he's got to go in a new direction. Before you know it, one of them goes personal. One of them brings in their family. One of them says something that the other one says, hey, wait a minute. Now you cross the line. Before you know it, they're not going to like each other. I assure you, before that fight goes off on August 26th, they're not going to like each other. Great. Even better. But you don't have to manufacture it now. And don't try to fool any of us right now. That's going to piss us off. And when Floyd's walking around saying, I'm not what I was 20 years ago, he's not very smart. Don't get tied in and try to break down the things he says. I get that they're dumb things to say. But then when he starts trying to say, I'm slow and my combinations are bad and blah, 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 as a way to make you think, oh, wow, maybe Connor really can beat this guy. This isn't that kind of event. It's not that kind of event. Okay? Floyd is taking all the risk. He is carrying boxing on his shoulders. Connor is taking no risk in that regard. He's taking all the risk in showing courage and stepping into something that isn't what he does. But this is what it is. Don't try to change it from there, Floyd. Yes, you have the reputation of boxing on your shoulders. No, Connor doesn't have anything on his. Don't try to change it. Just wear it. Wear the pressure. Man, I'm loaded up here. I'm loaded up here with pressure. I can't imagine this guy beating me. He's never done it before. He's never been hit with it by anybody like me. He's never put these gloves on before. He's never been in a ring as opposed to a cage. I can't imagine how he's got any shot. I don't know how the odds went from 25-1, me favorite, to me now only being a 7-1 favorite. Actually, 650-1. It's closing. It's going to be, guys, they're going to be 3-1 before this thing's done. Floyd, it's okay to tell the truth. It's okay to say this guy doesn't belong in here. It's okay to say I'm going to represent boxing. Connor did. Connor came out and said, I'd take this guy. And see, here's what nobody's considering. I love that Connor brought it up. Nobody is even contesting if we flipped roles. If Floyd was to come over to MMA, the quick and decisive ass kicking that he would take, nobody's even contesting that. I've been surprised at how many people are contesting what happens if Connor goes over there. We've seen guys come from boxing to MMA. James Toney did it. Most recent example. Didn't go well. We should be talking about the same thing. We're just reversing roles. But for some reason, it's not working that way. For some people, reason people aren't respecting boxing. What boxing hasn't caught on to is they don't have a community. Oscar De La Hoya keeps talking about the boxing community. Jim Lampley keeps talking about the boxing community. There is no community. I go outside into the streets of Portland, throw a rock and win any which direction. I'm not going to hit anybody that's part of this community. There's just fight fans. There's just people that care about big fights, that like the anticipation. They like the buildup. Dana White will tell you this fight is on August 26th. ESPN will tell you it started yesterday. Okay? ESPN's, they're both right. But ESPN's right too. It's on. It's on right now. One person can control that stage. You want to know something that happened to Connor? This wasn't fair. This was not fair. I want to defend Connor on this, and I want you guys to back me up. Connor had a really great line, and some people, these scumbags, tried to come out and call him a racist. This was not fair. So Floyd came over to Connor's side of the stage. This is at the very end of this thing. And Floyd starts shadow boxing. He starts moving around, and he's shadow boxing in front of Connor. It was kind of a weird thing Floyd was doing. He was just throwing ones, and they were about 60% speed. He wasn't even throwing some fast combinations to bring the crowd to their feet. It was just kind of a weird thing. He was moving around. He was just like throwing these jabs out. So what's Connor get? Connor's just sitting there in front watching him punch at nothing. There was really nothing happening. So Connor comes out, and he said, yeah, dance for me, Floyd. And people came out and said that he said, dance for me, boy. Now, he may have, my ears thought he said, dance for me, Floyd. Other people came out and said, he said, dance for me, boy. Either way, really, you're going to call Connor one of the worst names in the world, a racist? Oh, come on. First, I don't think you guys are right. That's my own opinion. I really thought he said, dance for me, Floyd. And I thought he said, Floyd, real fast, Floyd. Other people said he said, dance for me, boy. Either way, come on, man. Call him a racist. That's a jerk move. That's a jerk move by the website that picked that up. And I'm not even going to mention their name. They don't deserve it. Those guys were up there having fun with one another. Connor did the best he could in the situation. And Floyd wasn't upset. So shut up. Stay out of it. Floyd did have one good moment. He had one really good moment. If you're talking about who won the day, right? Connor started off really well. He had the suit. We were talking about that. He had the crowd's approval. Only one guy got booed. They both got a loud crowd applause. Connor's was louder. Only one guy got booed, and he got booed repeatedly, and that was Floyd. Connor never got booed once. I thought that was interesting. But Floyd had a great ending. He finished whatever it was he was saying, blah, 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 blah. And then he says, now it's time for the face-off, isn't it? Come on, let's get face-to-face. And that was a height of anticipation. I like that, and he called for it. He knew it was coming anyway. I mean, they always do a face-off. You got to do a stare-down. But Floyd called for it as though it was his idea. That was a smart move. Now all of a sudden, Connor's got to do what Floyd wants. Right? Even though they have to do it anyway, now Floyd made it his idea. And called for the face-to-face. And it was good. I mean, stare-downs are fun. Especially with Connor. You didn't even know what Connor's going to do. Oh, Let me throw this one last point in. Because I think you guys would have missed this. This was in one of the backroom scrums. When Old Man Mayweather broke in and interrupted Connor. This was during that. Somebody asked Connor if he was going to follow the rules of boxing. You know, or if he was going to do something to Floyd. And Connor And it's been very important that Conor has been disciplined. We're boxing. I'll be sued. I'll be in front of commissions. I'll lose my license. I'll lose my purse. I mean, come on, I'm going to box. It's very important that he says it because that is what he's going to do. Of course he is. But you've still got this dialogue going on of, will Conor do something else? Will Conor go take him down? Will he throw a leg kick? So Conor, for the first time ever, says, yeah, I might. I might just elbow this guy right in the head. And nobody could believe he said it. It was great. But Conor made this demand. He said, I'm going to box him. That's what I've agreed. But if he ever disrespects me from here on out, I might just go MMA on him. And it was great. He made this. What's Floyd going to do? Now Floyd's got to go say nice things about him. He was kidding. I get that he was kidding, but I still liked the line. There was still a brilliance behind saying, I will box him under the Queensberry rules unless he disrespects. Well, of course he's going to disrespect him. Sure he is. What do you think the press conference is all about? And then he threatens it, in which case I might just run my elbow into his temple. That was the threat that he made, not to kick him or take him down. And then he said, you know, if he puts his head down, I might just strangle him. And old man Mayweather loses it, that Conor would even make this threat. So then Conor doubles down. He looks, old man Mayweather says, I'll get in there and kick your ass if you try to choke my son. And Conor says, you know, for a trained neck, it takes him about 3 seconds to go unconscious. And old man Mayweather, oh, he's lost. Okay, I'll come over that rope and I'll whip your ass, blah, blah, blah. In fact, I'll do it right now. And Conor says, for an untrained neck, it takes 2 seconds. And he says, your boy's got an untrained neck. That means 2 seconds till he's limp. And he's still looking right at old man. And old man's, you know, trying to come at him only a little bit, but he is taking some steps forward, way from the back of the room. And Conor says, I don't think you can get up those stairs and through the ropes in those 2 seconds. And he's right. He's right. Conor wins that.
All right, Chael. So I've been wondering, if you got into a smack talk contest, you're just talking about Floyd and Conor. If you were at the same table and you were all sitting around smacking each other, who would win?
Who gave you a speaking role in this? Where did that microphone come from? What, you turned on Joel's old microphone over there?
No, this is my microphone.
All right. First off, you're always welcome to come on. I just can't remember the time you've ever done it. Okay, I'll answer the question. So you're inserting my... How would I do, like, at a press conference, talking against Conor and Floyd? Is that what you're asking me?
Yeah.
All right, I think you're asking me that because Jim Rome's got the smack off Conor. I don't know why the hell you asked me, but here we are, so let's take it on. Floyd's a dum-dum. That would be no problem. I have done press conferences with Conor, and I have even looked over on the stage. Now, this is when Conor was just becoming Conor. I have looked over and thought, who is this guy? Because I was impressed from a positive standpoint. I thought, who is this? I got to turn it up a little bit. You know, if I want more questions, and all of these things are battles. People understand that. I do. Everything's a battle. I need the loudest reaction at a weigh-in. I need the most clicks on an interview. The podcast numbers. I mean, every single thing is a battle for me. But the press conference is included. I'm keeping track, whether I'm acting like it or not, who's getting the most questions. And on top of that, who's getting the most time. And I have looked over. I remember specifically where I was in Boston. I just won a fight in the main event, and Conor was an undercard fight. And I remember looking over at the press conference saying, hey, if I don't do something here, I'm going to lose this. So I mean it as a Conor's very good. Here, let me say it to you like this. Floyd, I don't want to insult Floyd. Come on here, call him a dumb. Floyd's a man. Floyd's amazing. I don't mean to insult him, but I would put it to you more eloquently like this. Floyd is the best for his field. The boxers as a whole are not good at that. As a whole, they're just not very good. The greatest ever for boxing was Muhammad Ali, rest his soul, and with all due respect, but I want to be able to talk about him because people will recognize that name. There's not a lot of boxers I could throw. How many names can I throw out that people are even going to know? I got Muhammad Ali, I got Mike Tyson, I got Floyd Mayweather. I think I could slip De La Hoya still in, but maybe that's just me. People don't know who the hell a boxer is. Muhammad Ali goes down as the greatest ever. The truth was he was getting $20,000 a fight at a time that he could have been getting $200,000 a month from Vince McMahon if he was good enough to go in that field. He was not good enough. He was a good speaker for boxing. Boxing sucks. They're just not good at it. Floyd is very good for boxing. They're just not very good at it. Let me give you an example, Jacob. There is a guy, and I can't produce his name, and if you could, I'd appreciate it because it would sure help my story right now, but he's in baseball. And if you go back about 5 years, he's a pitcher. He started working a gimmick, which was he would put on these fake beards. And for all I know, maybe it was a real beard. It was so big in his face, I just assumed it was fake beards. But maybe it was a real beard. But he had this facial hair, and he started to get known for it. And he started to get interviews because of it. Now, the truth is, you and I could walk outside of this studio right now, and within the sixth floor of this downtown Portland office of Alpha Media, we could find somebody with equally or more facial hair. That guy can't get any time. So why could this guy with a beard, whether it was fake or real, get us talking about him 5 years later and become the biggest draw, at least interview-wise, in baseball? Because he's the only guy with any kind of a gimmick. He's the only guy doing something besides throwing a goddamn ball at another guy who's either got the option of not getting hit by the ball or trying to hit the ball with a stick. It's just not that interesting of a thing. So now you throw us somebody with a crazy amount of facial hair. Well, we've never seen that before. It's a big deal for that space. I remember this guy. Do you even know who I'm talking about? I want to say Williams. Am I close?
I'm going to check real quick.
Pitcher baseball facial hair. All right, Google that. I'm quite sure he'll pop up. But at any rate, he started to have a little fun with it. He started to get some media. I can remember him doing an interview, and it was from his house. They set the camera up like in his house. Could have been a Skype. There's a long hallway behind him. He's just sitting there doing his little interview. And did you ever see the movie Pulp Fiction? They had a character in there known as the Gimp. And if you haven't seen, you're shaking your head to me. You have not seen. That's the guy. What's his name?
I'm looking for him. I'll get in a second.
Okay, that's the guy that you got his face up there. So he's doing this interview, and midway through the interview, he's just sitting there answering the questions. He's doing saying his little piece. Midway through the interview, a Gimp, which consists of a man in bondage, leather straps, and, you know, are you with me on that? Okay. All of a sudden stumbles through the house in the background from room to room, and the camera just picks it up. It was funny. It was creative. Is it really funny? No. Is it really creative? Absolutely not. Is it the most creative thing that baseball has done in the last century? Yeah. Yeah. You got his name?
Brian Wilson.
Yeah, I think that's what I said. Didn't I say Wilson? Brian Wilson. Is that a real beard or is it a fake beard? I suppose it doesn't matter.
That looks real.
Okay. Fair enough. So you get the point. The guy grew out some facial hair, but he got some play with it because he's in a sport that they don't do anything. Pete Rose throwing a few bucks down on a team that he worked with is the biggest thing baseball's ever had. They just don't have a lot. And that's not an insult to baseball. They just don't have a lot. People, you know, the sport seems to sell itself. The need for a gimmick and notoriety just has never really been needed there. I would tie him in, though, because he's a great example that he did come out with a little bit of a gimmick, and he got more play than anybody in terms of the media for that short window while it lasted. Floyd, to carry that over, Floyd is not some kind of a great talker, but he is for that field. He does out-talk Maidana and Victor Ortiz. In fairness, he does. He has a hard time putting a completely eloquent and coherent sentence together. But he does a damn good job in that field. Well, when he's put up against Connor, Connor's just flat good. Connor could go right now with The Rock. Right now. He could go right now with Austin. He's going to come up short, but he can go with those guys right now. This Wilson guy, your point about that I brought up, Floyd, no, of course not. Muhammad Ali, no, of course, no, absolutely not. But for that field. So when you ask how, what have I done with them? I'm giving you a very long answer. I've had the opportunity to go with Connor. I thought he was talented. You want to know who I think is underrated is Rampage. I've always thought that Rampage was the best speaker in MMA. I always thought he had the charisma and knew where the cameras are and was, I always thought Rampage was number one. I never thought it was between Connor and I, and I get asked that question a lot. But Connor, Floyd, and I, Floyd's coming in third. All right. I'll let you know who got the bronze medal. and it's going to be Floyd. So, but there is a difference and there is a significance. And it is important because a lot of times people don't realize that. As I'm getting ready for the smack off, somebody's going to get crowned the greatest smack talker out there. And they're going to get crowned by Jim Rome, the biggest sports, most reputable show, longest standing that I know of. I don't know anybody that's been around for over 20 years. If those guys want a chance, they can come on. And you didn't ask me this question so that we could plug the smack off. I'm just going to take the opportunity. Any of them can come on. There's some golden tickets, and I assure you Rome will give it to them, whether it's The Rock or it's Mayweather or McGregor. Mayweather and McGregor are both going to do the Rome show. They're going to be begging to do the Rome show. They're going to do it multiple times before this fight. I don't think they're going to show up on the smack off. So in a world, and we live on it here, and you're welcome, a lot of times it is the most willing. A lot of times to win, all you have to do is step forward. We believe in that around here. I will be on the smack off. So if you're asking me who the best smacker is, if you're asking me who the best talker is, I'll put it on the line. Those guys want to come on and compete, they can compete too. That should answer your question. Did I answer your question?
Yeah.
And I brought up a good point, though, about what I feel like I taught you something using that baseball player, Wilson, as an example, that some guys do get elevated as this great and charismatic person, but we don't always take the time to go, well, yeah, that's true for that field. You'll get a great actor sometimes. It's like, this guy's this wonderful actor, and I know because he was at a school play, and it was a really great play of Hamlet, and my son was the lead, and what a great job. But are you saying that you want to go put him next to Daniel Day-Lewis right now, or Ed Norton right now? Okay, let's keep it in the field. For the high school room, did he have some thespian skills? Did he show some personality? Did he ham it up? For other plays that we've seen put on in a room that seats 70? The tickets are $10 on a Sunday afternoon. Did he outperform those kids? Great. Do you want to put him on screen next to Brad Pitt right now? Then you need to answer that question too. Our new sponsor is MeUndies, the softest underwear you'll ever wear. They are one of those products that you have to experience for yourself. I could tell you all about them all day long, but the feeling is unbelievable. Every pair of MeUndies is sustainably sourced and made from a fabric called Micromodal. This fabric is about 3 times softer than cotton. And if you're used to buying boring underwear, MeUndies is going to change everything. Because MeUndies comes in all kinds of colors and patterns. They've got a new release, limited edition, every single month, and they always sell out. So you got to go to the website. This month's pattern was designed by the legendary 80s clothing brand Cross Colors, with names that live up to the bold design and the bright colors. Increased DPs, you dig, and my favorite, the OG. You've got to see them for yourself, and right now you're going to save 20% off of your first pair and receive free shipping. Just for being one of my listeners, you're welcome. Just go to MeUndies.com/Chael for your savings. There's a reason MeUndies has sold over 5 million pairs of underwear. And when you feel them, you're going to understand, and I promise you're going to love them. Guys, if for any reason you don't, they're free. Get 20% off of your first pair, plus free shipping. For listeners of your welcome, just go to MeUndies.com/Chael to get this. That's MeUndies.com/Chael. MeUndies.com/Chael. You guys know what I'm doing tonight. It's Thursday. What do I do on Thursday? I watch Alone on History. 5 teams. So 10 people. All connected. Father and son, married couple, all separated. Each of them are given 5 items. So a total of 10 items. They have to have these 10 items to survive. They have to. But they drop them off at a location in separate spots. Now they're all alone. There is nobody there, including production. This is where it gets interesting. These contestants are taught to film themselves. They are alone. The first thing they have to do without question to survive is find one another. I got 5 items. Well, my partner's got the other 5, and we got to have all 10 collectively. They then have to stay alive. Literally. They got to find some food. They got to find something to drink. They got to find shelter. This is before we deal with the weather and the conditions and the elements and the prey. I'm talking about wolves and coyotes. I would suspect snakes and bears. not for me, but it's for me to watch and enjoy. And you want to know how you win? And only history can do this. Only history even has the courage to do something like this. You win when you're the last to say, I quit. You lose and you are removed from the situation by saying, I give up. I'm out. Boom, that team's gone. No questions asked. Start with five teams. You move down to 4-3-2, and eventually somebody gets notified that everybody else gave up. And that's it. That's it. It's Blair Witch style. They're filming themselves. They don't even have a production crew to lead. It's really quite interesting. It's on history. It's tonight. It's Call Alone. Check it out. I love when you guys do. And then we can go discuss it on social media. A lot of fun. Something else from the press conference. Something else from the whole day. And I hope you guys are enjoying this because it is a lot of fun. It really is. The buildup and the hype and the gamesmanship. I'm sitting here breaking down what these guys are wearing. And, oh, Floyd showed up in sweats and Connor showed up in a suit. But it matters. It matters. I told you guys, you know, I like politics. I don't discuss them much because it bores you guys. I like amateur wrestling. I try to stay away from it because it bores you guys. But when you look at politics, they're fighting. They're just using their words. And so many people will tell you, well, it's this idea versus that idea. Oh, come on. No, it's not. It's not. That is not what elections are about. It's about candidates. One is more likable. But why? But why? That's where it comes in. Every movement is broken down. Everything they wear is broken down. Every mannerism, every facial expression. And that's what these press conferences are. You want to know another highlight? Brendan Schaub. Brendan Schaub was on the announce team, which he deserves a congrats for. Not easy to get. He was picked up by Showtime. So you got Mauro. Mauro's the host. You got Brendan representing the MMA portion. And you have Paulie representing the boxing portion. They do a great job together. And Mauro's in the middle, and he's the host of this thing. And Mauro seemed to me as though he didn't know what foot to what camp he was in. He had a foot on both sides of it. He was trying to represent the boxing. He's a boxing announcer, but he's kind of trying to give some credence over there to MMA because he's the announcer for Pride and now with Bellator. And Brendan never backed down. And these guys were bickering with one another, but it was great. It was fun. That's what we tuned in for. And Brendan, though, I don't agree with him in the least, but it makes me wonder why. So I come to you guys, particularly when we're talking about this boxing, I come to you with a lot of credibility because I'm a fighter. I would know. When did I know how an MMA guy is going to do with boxing? You sure think so. But I have a different opinion than Brendan. Brendan comes to you with credibility too. He's a fighter. He spent time in boxing gyms, including the Wild Card, one of the most famous gyms on the whole planet, the most famous gym in all of America. He spent time there. But he comes away with a different experience than me, and he's going, listen, not only can Connor win this, I assure you, he put out a $100,000 bet. I will actually bet you he wins rounds. I think he can win the fight, but I will put $100,000 that he wins rounds with an S, plural. I'm looking at it, scratching my head going, based on what, I just don't see it that way. So I'm curious, what experiences did Brendan have? I'll use one, me for example. When I go and box with Joe Schilling, it's not close. It's not even competitively close. Now, I always go back and I love sparring with Joe because he's a good partner. And even though I could find and feel and see where the gaps are between us, he's a good partner. He carries me. He doesn't hurt me. And I can then do my next round and then come back to Joe and then do my next round and come back to Joe. He's a good partner. If he ever decided he didn't want to be a good partner, I don't know that I could go on and do another round and then come back to him and do it and get through the whole workout. It's that big of a gap. It's a timing issue. I can't find him. He's got something in my face the whole time. It's a timing issue. That's hard to verbalize. It's hard for me to let you guys know. Even if I had I not felt that and somebody else tried to explain this to me, I wouldn't really get it. So I don't really expect you guys to get what I mean. But he follows a rhythm and he follows a beat and he sticks to it and there's a glove in my face the entire time. And before I can get to him and get my offense going, I have to get that glove out of my face because that face represents my eyes. And he has something in my eye. I can't see him. He has something in my eyes constantly. I have to get, I've got to beat his rhythm before I can slip, before I can bob and weave. And I've got to see him. And there's that rhythm and understanding the distance that is different. The boxing distance is different than an MMA distance by about a half an inch. That's it. But a half an inch is a lot. It's a lot. It's the difference in everything. So that's my experience. I could use some other guys' names, but you guys know who Joe Schilling is, so I'll use his name. And I got a lot of size on him. A lot of size. I've had more fights than him. So these things that people are using as intangibles that they favor towards Conor, such as size, they're wrong about it. I'm sick of telling you that I'm literally tired of talking about it. It is not a size advantage. That's a disadvantage. But I have the advantage. Our reach is even. But our experience is not. It's just not. And his timing is different. And his ability to understand range is different. But you won't get the same headlines if you talk about timing or range. Reach and height always seem to be the ones that grab headlines in the combative arts. And then size always works. Size is just an easy talking point for people. They just tend to get that. Oh, yeah, the bigger guy. Well, who's the most athletic guy on the football field? Is it the lineman or is it the quarterback? I mean, there's all sorts of examples that I could give you. In basketball, the best player, is it the heaviest one? Is it the guy with the longest reach? I could go on and on. I could go swimming, tennis, baseball, golf, NASCAR, horse. I could go through every sport I could think of. Cricket, lacrosse. I mean, how fun do we want to get here? All the way to badminton. Is there any sport out there where the biggest person has an advantage? Any. We're the biggest guy is more athletic. We're the biggest guy is quicker. Or the reach. I'm sick of hearing about length too. Like we've got some greats in fighting that have some weird reach. And I know what you all are getting ready to tell me, John Jones. Yeah, you'll find some examples. You take John's reach away, he's still the world champion. Okay. John's not known for using that reach. Never has been. He uses those elbows. He shortens his reach. It's not keeping people at the end of his jab and his opponent has to get inside. All these terms that you've been told for all these years that are what matters in a fight. We don't actually have any evidence towards it. There's not actually an athlete that you could point to or any of those things were ever true. But boy, we keep hearing about them, don't we? So just think of this. Because putting on gloves and getting in there and fighting somebody is something that just not very many people have done, including in the practice room. It makes me wonder, though, what experiences did Brendan have with boxers where he's going, oh, yeah, absolutely, Conor's going to win rounds. And then my experience with Joe Schilling specifically where I'm going, no, he's got no chance. There's no chance. It's a different time. It's a different rhythm. It's a different speed. It's a totally different sport. I don't know that we'll ever have the answer. But as indignant as I am, as I tell you, with the strength and credibility of my long career and having done this back and forth in boxing gyms and in MMA, Brendan comes to you with that same strength and that same credibility, but he's got a different opinion. He's got a different opinion. So I've just wondered, how did we get to such opposite ends with the same paths? We got to different ends in terms of our conclusion. It's interesting, but I do think, and I think they deserve credit. I think that they deserve credit. Morrow, Pauly, and Brendan was a really good team. And Pauly wasn't totally certain. He really wasn't. He brought up some great examples from boxing, but he wasn't as strong in defending boxing and Floyd as Brendan was in his stance and defending Conor. So Brendan has felt something and experiencing something different in his paths, in his MMA/boxing experience than I have. Do what you want with that. Doesn't make either one of us wrong. Oh, and my I want to give a final question. We talked about this yesterday, but for some reason it won't go away. And I asked you guys, hey, tweet me. Just let me know, at Chael Sonnen, if any of you thought there was controversy in Verdum versus Overeem, because this story won't go away. There was another headline, and it wasn't highly viewed, and there wasn't much in the comment section, but again, that Verdum and Overeem, that the decision came out the wrong way. I'm not seeing it. I didn't feel it that night. I didn't feel the crowd felt it. I didn't feel there was any controversy. I thought it was straightforward. I thought Overeem beat him 2-1. Outstruck him, outmoved, outgrappled him when he was on top. Verdum did make that same mistake. He pulled guard a couple times. That's not good. It's not good for the judge, but it was great. Verdum fought great. Had great performance, close fight. All the rounds were close, but I thought they were clear. I thought the one that Verdum won it. It was close. It was a good, solid round. Verdum won. Reem won the other two. What the hell am I missing? Why is anybody still talking about this? Including me. Why am I talking about it? I want to know why I'm talking. You guys tell me. Why am I talking about this? Let me know. Let me know if you were surprised when that decision came in. Didn't we all think, hey, it's 2-1? Overeem? And then the judges came in. And they all said the same thing. 2-1, Overeem? I thought it was clear. Until tomorrow, I am going to go and watch another one of the press conferences. I'm addicted. We got 4 of them. 2 down, 2 to go. Until tomorrow, well, I'm sure we'll be recapping it. I'm sure something's going to happen, and hopefully it isn't old man Mayweather. He needs to butt out of it. He's not involved. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
Thanks for listening to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Have you heard Spike's Car Radio? It's comedian, actor, writer Spike Ferriston sitting on the porch in Malibu talking with some cool people about cool cars and life in general.
My first guest is Jerry Seinfeld. He's right here. He was all right. Don't try to hug him.
Chris Hardwick.
I could feel everything on the road. I mean, it was basically like, it was like unprotected sex for driving.
Jeremy Piven.
You and Jerry are spiritually tied to cars, and I respect it and I love it, but I don't quite get it yet, but I want to get it.
Download new episodes of Spike's Car Radio every Wednesday on the Podcast One app, or save time and subscribe now at Apple Podcasts or at podcastone.com.